Thank you, and welcome to today's ABCEP, Certified Environmental Professional Credential, a webinar explaining why the CEP is right for you. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. Should you require operator assistance at any point during this presentation, simply press star, then zero, and an operator will intercept your line privately. A question-and-answer session will follow the presentation, and instructions for asking questions will be given at that time. Thank you all for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, ABCEP President, Mr. Mark Gerber.
Thank you, and welcome everybody to this webinar. We hope that you'll find that it's going to be useful to you as you begin or continue the process of navigating the CEP application process. And what I want to do first is give some thanks to NAEP for allowing us to use their webinar platform for this webinar. I think that we have a great working relationship with NAEP, and we appreciate their allowing us to use their platform. This webinar has been put together by the Academy of Board Certified Environmental Professionals. We'll refer to it in this webinar as ABCEP, to give you a pretty fairly comprehensive idea of what to expect as you go through the CEP process, what some of the benefits of obtaining a CEP are, and some of the things beyond just a certification that you can expect from being part of ABCEP. ABCEP has been certifying environmental professionals since 1979, so that's we've had 37 years of growth and support of professionals in this discipline. When you think about all that collective wisdom in an organization, and especially in this field that changes so much, you start to realize the value in being tied into such a large network with a lot of history and a lot of understanding of what goes on in our group and in our organization. Those who will be presenting today, myself, I'm the ABCEP president. Corey Platt, the ABCEP treasurer, will be presenting today, as will Dr. Chris Temke, the ABCEP CRB board chairman. And Ms. Tina Richards will also be presenting as an ABCEP trustee. So let's go through a little bit of what we're going to talk about today. We'll start off by giving you a kind of an overview of who we are, what ABCEP is really made of, what makes us different from other certifications, other organizations you might belong to. Then we'll talk a little bit about what you get out of being a CEP, what the benefits are, what you can obtain from the network as well as the organization itself. And then we'll go a little bit through the process of becoming a CEP, how you go through that application process, some things that might help streamline the process for you and help you understand it a little bit easier. Sometimes these kind of things can seem overwhelming and daunting a little bit, and so we'll kind of help you understand that better. So who are we? What are we as an organization? We are fully accredited by the CESB, the Council of Engineering and Scientific Specialty Boards. The CESB accredits a number of other organizations, notably some that you may recognize, but notably the certification of the professional engineer, the graduate engineer, engineering technician. There's a few that you'll probably recognize, but there are quite a few others that belong that are accredited by CESB. As I mentioned earlier, our Certified Environmental Professional, the CEP program, was initiated in 1979, so it's been around for 37 years. We have CEPs worldwide, and I found it very interesting in being part of this organization to see that expertise coming from other, not only within our country and the regions within our country, but also other countries and how they deal with some similar problems and similar issues that we deal with. The CEP was developed in response to the need for interdisciplinary certification in the environmental field. And as you look over the offerings and focus areas of the different certifications, you can see that we have six areas that we provide focus on for your particular certification needs. We've recently reevaluated all those areas to make sure that they're relevant to the changing world and relevant to new issues that may come up, and so that we can keep those certification areas relevant to you. And it includes the whole CEP process includes mid-level and senior environmental specialists. The CEP is designed to capture those with a little bit higher level of experience and some management experience while still offering a growth pathway for the emerging professional through the use of the CEP IT certification. So the organization as a whole is made up of the Board of Trustees and committees, and then you as membership. The leadership of ABCEP is made up of a 12-person board of trustees. It's actually 13. We just recently added a non-voting CEP IT position to the board of trustees so that we can give some voice to those who are still working through that pathway of working on their credentials. The board of trustees makes use of a number of committees and for advancing the program, but in those committees sometimes they change a little bit and move around and they may have a different focus depending on how things are within the environmental discipline. But the committees are the executive team, the certification maintenance committee, the communications committee. I don't see the certification maintenance committee on our slide, but that's one that we've recently added to address some issues. Marketing, member services, and the certification review board. We'll hear from Chris in a little while. And then we have the membership of the organization, and that's really what makes up the bulk of our group, the collective wisdom in our group, the substance of what we have, and that's who we rely on for serving the organization and serving the industry as a whole. So the CESB, as I mentioned, accredits our certification and actions as an organization. So they monitor us and make sure that our organization, that our certification is robust, that the program is robust, and they ensure that our membership understands environmental concepts, terms, principles, including maintaining the body of knowledge and keeping abreast of all the changes within the environmental discipline. But it's also one of their purposes is to make sure that we know how to reach out, obtain, and access information that's relevant to what we certify. The body of knowledge is one of the most important components. This is one of the benefits that you get as a CEP is access to this body of knowledge. It's updated every year by the CRB. It includes educational information, courses and seminars, books and periodicals, other publications, websites, articles, other organizations that we are affiliated with or that may assist you in either what work you're doing or in furthering your CEP. So I'm going to turn the presentation now over to Corey Platt. He's an ABCEP board member, and he will he'll take over from here, and then I will. I'll just turn it over to Corey.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark. My name is Corey Platt. I've been a board member for several years, and I'm currently also functioning in the treasurer role. I welcome all of you to today's webinar. Glad that you can join us to learn more about what makes us different. There are two principal items that make us different, and the first is our code of ethics. Along with a typical, creed and ethics statement and agreement, it provides a guidance for practice as an environmental professional and encourages the development of the profession from the individual's standpoint. The ability to be associated with the academy as a credentialed professional provides a number of benefits that we'll get into throughout the talk today. However, having a base foundation of professional performance and professional ethics is really a root benefit in our organization. Responsibility and obtaining your credential through a peer review process as compared to a multiple choice exam is one of our core tenets. Through that effort, we also expect the credentialed professional to be able to demonstrate their responsibility. And you'll hear through today's presentation these two terms, responsible charge and responsible supervision. The definitions thereof are on the slide there in front of you. However, the essence of this is to show that your efforts and your background have provided you firsthand experience to demonstrate to your peers and to the professional community that you have taken and demonstrated responsibility on environmental projects within your functional area of our profession. So what are some of the benefits of being a CEP? To the individual, it provides increased marketability and career opportunities. The ability to have a focus on your professional development and be in a peer organization, of like-minded professionals is a validation of your professional skills and your advancement and achievements. To your, you can see there on this next slide a number of other kind of more soft benefits to you as an individual. And being able to also be involved in the organization, in the peer group, that is a national basis. So you have the opportunity to share and to learn from others that go beyond the corporation or agency or university that you are that you're employed at or that you work within. There are engagement opportunities in order to continue to provide that professional interface. To your employer, one big selling point to the employer is how it reduces your professional liability insurance coverage. I know that from my professional history, this is a very important aspect. At one point, I was independent for a number of years, and the clients require, professional liability insurance. And without having the CEP credential, which was, because of its accreditation by the CESP, I would not have been able to obtain that professional liability insurance. So that had both an individual at the time and employer benefit. It also, at the time when I obtained my CEP, it was a basis for promotion within the employer that I was at. It also strengthens your technical proposals to clients because it shows to your clients that you have credentialed professionals on hand that you are going to be bringing to their project. There is also peer recognition Each year, we award a number of recognitions to our peers within the organization. The Dr. Richard Kramer Memorial Award, the President's Leadership Award, and then also within the CEP in Training IT program, the Emerging Young Environmental Professional Achievement Award. Now, at this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to our CRB chairman, Chris Kemp.
Okay, thanks, Corey. And so far, you've heard a little bit about what the organization is about and why you should be thinking about getting your certified environmental professional credential. What I want to focus on now is how do you become one? What are the requirements for doing this? And go into a little bit of depth and detail about it so that you understand what the options are. Because there's sort of an option for everybody, you might say. My role in this process is as the chairman of the Certification Review Board. When an application is completed and sent to what we call the CRB, it's my job to assign a panel of 7 CEPs that will review the application and make a determination on whether or not you are meet the criteria to become a CEP. So with that sort of introduction, let's just go a little bit further and talk about it. When ABCEP began, the only option we offered was to become a certified environmental professional. But as you can see from this slide, there are some other options that have arisen since then. And I'm going to talk about each one of those. The certified environmental professional in training is for people that don't yet quite have enough experience under their belt to become a CEP. And then for those who have been in the business for a long time, there's a slightly different application process for a certified environmental professional by eminence. And then for those that have been around for a long time and maybe are scaling back in their careers, there is also the Certified Environmental Professional Emeritus. So we've got all the age groups covered from young to old in ways that you can become a CEP. So let's take a look at the education and experience threshold. What is it? What are some of the minimum requirements? There's two ways that this is broken down. You can become a CEP without having been a CEP in training, or you can become a CEP having been a CEP IT, as it says here on the table, for 3 years. And the other things that you'll see here in the second and third column, it talks about non-responsible charge and responsible charge slash supervision. This is an area where there tends to be a lot of confusion because people don't quite always grasp what this means. And I want to make sure that it's clear to everybody. And if it's not, at the end, you can always ask a question. But let's take a look first at becoming a CEP without having been a CEPIT. If you have a bachelor's degree, you need a total of 9 years' experience before you can apply. If you have a master's degree, you knock off a year, and you can do it after 8 years. And if you have a PhD, your total time before you can apply to become a CEP is 7 years. Now, within that 9, 8, and 7 year time period, we assume that probably most people as they're starting out are going to have several years where they aren't really responsible for any projects on their own. And that's that non-responsible charge time. And you can see it's 4, 3, and 2 years, depending on your educational degree. That's the time when you are doing work on projects and you're under somebody else's supervision or direction. But in order to become a CEP, you have to have had some time in what is called the responsible charge and supervision. And you can see that's 5 years for each of the 3 educational levels. All right. Now, if you jump down to the CEP, if you become a CEPIT, for 3 years, you can knock a little bit of time off of when you can apply for to become a CEPIT. And you can see there that, once again, the three educational levels, the number of years for non-responsible in charge, the number of years for the responsible charge and supervision, and the total number of years is 8, 7, and 6. So you save a little bit of time by becoming a CEP, but that's really only one of the benefits of becoming a CEPIT, and we'll talk about that a little bit more here in a few minutes. All right. So this slide, the first part sort of repeats what you just saw in the last slide, but I want to focus a little bit more and spend a little more time talking about the responsible charge and responsible supervision. After you've had your, what we call the base years of experience, where you're not necessarily in charge of anything, in order to become that, to get to the CEP level, you've got to have those 5 years of responsible charge or responsible supervision. And the definition here on this slide talks about responsible charge. And basically what it's saying is that this is work that you do where you are the primary person responsible for it. You might be the person entirely responsible for it, or you might be leading a team of people that are collectively working on it together. But ultimately, the documents you produce under this responsible charge period are documents that are your documents, and they're made without the advice or approval of others. So in other words, you're the approving person of whatever documentation it is you're producing. That's the thing that people sometimes don't understand, and what we see in the applications that come through on occasion is applicants don't make clear that they've met this responsible charge criteria. So when you are applying for it, make sure that you understand what responsible charge is, and also make sure that you clearly demonstrate that you were a responsible charge person. All right? Another option, in addition to that, is just to be responsible supervision, where, and this is much easier for most people to understand, you're the boss, okay, over, or you're overseeing another person's work, where you assume the responsibility for the work product. That's things that, you know, tend to be reserved for people that have been in the business for a while or have their own company. Something along those lines. So those are that's the one area where a lot of people that are applying for the CEP credential sometimes and tripping up and can actually be denied because they haven't made this clear. The panel, when they review your application, this is one of the things they look at very closely to make sure that you actually have the type of experience that the CEP credential requires. So that's something that you want to make sure that you understand. And if you are a CEPIT, you will have a mentor who will help you with that and help you to make sure that you clearly state that. So hopefully that's clear to everybody. And like I said at the end, if you need some more clarification, you may ask a question about that. Moving on, if you are a CEPIT, you can get to become a CEP by being a CEPIT for 3 years and meeting the other requirements. So it takes a little bit of time off of the time it takes to get to the CEP credential. And it's also a great learning experience to have a mentor that helps you and guides you in developing your career. So that's something that if you are, you know, 3-4 years into your career, or even a little bit longer, but you haven't had a lot of in-charge experience, it's nice to have to become a CEPIT and sort of learn the ropes and maybe jump ahead of some other people that don't take advantage of that opportunity. In determining where you want to be in your career, you also have the option of selecting a functional area in which to become a CEP. All right. There are several of them. They'll be in the next slide, which I guess I should show you right now, and that is functional areas in assessment, operations, planning, documentation, research, education, and sustainability. And if you fit into one of those criteria, and that's the kind of thing that you want to do when you are completing your application, you can check off that you want to be certified in this functional area. There are some essay questions, which you'll hear a little bit more about in a few minutes, that relate to these functional areas that you'll have to respond to. And I also mentioned that recently, or not within the past year or so, the ABCEP Board of Trustees has also decided now that people can apply to become a CEP without declaring a functional area. So you don't have to do that unless you really want to. And it's a personal choice. Some people like it, and some people would rather be a little more open. Some people also think that they fall maybe into two or three of these functional areas, and so they select none at all. It doesn't really affect your application process, other than it gives you maybe a wider range of questions, essay questions to answer, but you're still evaluated the same way whether you choose a functional area or if you do not. For those people that have been in the business for a while and maybe have been in a responsible charge or responsible supervision for maybe 10, 15, or 20 years, there is a process that we instituted about a year and a half ago called CEP by Eminence. And this is very similar to the CEP normal application, except that you are exempt from answering the essay questions, with the exception of two questions that you have to answer related to ethics and keeping current in the business. Excuse me, I'll restate that. You only have to answer the question on ethics about to become a CEP by Eminence. But you also, if you are at this point in your career, have likely done or produced publications, professional papers, done major presentations relevant to environmental issues, and you would be required to submit a couple examples of those to show that you are actually at that level and that you have the ability to do these types of presentations or write these kinds of papers. The eligibility for this is, you'll notice it says 20 years of professional experience. You can knock 2 years off if you have a doctorate. And you have to have 15 years of responsible charge or responsible supervision. And generally, these are going to be people that are, you know, senior vice presidents, owners of companies. And you also have to be able to demonstrate what they say is a record of service to the profession. That's also something that whether you're applying for a CEP by Eminence or for just a CEP is an area where people need to focus. They don't always put down, applicants don't always include the information about themselves. What have you done for the profession? Have you been on in other organizations? Have you served in a leadership position? Those things are important in looking at both CEP by Eminence and just the normal CEP process. Finally, last thing I just want to touch on briefly is the CEP Emeritus. These are people that have retired from practice. Generally, we end up awarding somebody a CEP Emeritus if they've been a CEP for a while, and they've been, as it says here, for a minimum of 5 years. A petition, which is a request, written request, submitted to the Board of Trustees. And if it's granted, you don't have to pay dues, although you can certainly volunteer if you like. And if you want to come back into the profession actively again, you can do that, but only one time during your lifetime. And you can use the CEP Emeritus with your name, because some people, when they retire from this profession, still end up doing some small side consulting projects and things like that. So it's always nice to be able to continue to say that you are still a CEP. So that gives you just sort of a brief overview of what it's like to become a CEP and what it takes. I want to turn it now back over to, Tina, I think, is next, to talk a little bit about her personal stories as they relate to becoming a CEP. So, Tina, I guess you're up.
Yes, thank you. Hello, everybody. This is Tina Richards. I work for Orange County Environmental Protection Division, and I've had the privilege of applying to be a CEP in training, and that basically began in 2014. I started with the mentoring program, and that was really a great experience because I was able to kind of get that personal assessment of what Chris was talking about, try to understand, you know, the responsible charge and supervision, and kind of go over the essay questions and refine what questions I thought were ideal for me. And then kind of in preparation for the CEP application. So recently I've been able to organize the questions and submit them for the CEP. So it's been a great experience for me so far, and I've actually recently just been able to serve on the Board of Trustees. So we're looking to get more CEPITs involved in the organization, and that's been something that I've been able to be a part of, getting younger people involved. So it's been really great. And now we're going to dive into the application and review process. So we've talked a little bit about the various parts, the various aspects of the CEP and all the different areas that we can, and kind of bringing it down to brass tacks here, how much are things and how much are we costing. So as you can see in this table, various requirements. And for the CEPIT, it's going to be different than for the CEP versus the Eminence and the Emeritus. So the application fee for the in-training is the initial $75. And then once you're accepted, the certification fee is $62.50. Of course, you do need a bachelor's degree. You're going to need 3 letters of recommendation or reference letters. And there is a area on our website that goes into more detail about what the reference letter should state and things like that. There's samples on the website. You do not need the essay questions for CEP in training, and you do have an assigned mentor. The years in responsible charge or supervision can range from 1 to 5. For the CEP, it's going to be $200 for the application fee, and then the certification fee is going to be $125. Of course, you do need the bachelor's diploma and transcripts. You can have more, as Chris had previously stated down here at the bottom. It shows master's degree is going to give you 1 year instead of that full 9 years, and PhD, you're going to take off 2 years, so you're going to need 7 years. You will need to work on the essay questions. There's a total of 5 essay questions, and you can have an optionally mentor assigned. So if you're kind of interested in maybe changing areas within the environmental field and you want to be mentored by somebody in the energy sector or the health sector or things like that, we certainly have the ability to pair you with somebody who can mentor you on a more professional level. Or if you're just looking to maybe get some supervisory experience, apply for jobs in that area, you want to be paired with a supervisor. There's a lot that we can do within our mentoring program for not only CEPITs, but CEPs that are looking to enhance their career. You do need the full 9 years in responsible charge to apply for the CEP, but again, that can vary depending on your level of education. CEP by Eminence is similar to the CEP itself, but it does not require the essay questions. So that's your main difference with the CEP by Eminence. You do, of course, need the 20 years of experience. So if you've been in the business a long time, you have 20 years of experience, you can use your credentials and avoid the essay questions. For Emeritus, it is a lot easier, so it's more of a breeze for you guys, just to kind of, you've obviously put in the work, so we're making it easier for you. Transitioning from a CEPIT to a full CEP, what I would recommend that you do is obviously work on your application with your mentor. On our website, we have 2 really great items, 1 manual for the mentee and 1 manual for the mentor. And that just kind of walks you through what it means to be a mentee and what we, hope that you aspire to and work towards. Of course, we've recently changed the rules so that CEPITs can actually sit on the board. So I would encourage others to consider getting involved with the board and sitting in on board meetings. All members are welcome to participate and observe, listen in on board meetings. Of course, there's a lot of opportunities to promote the organization. We've done a lot of outreach and going to different events, trying to get others involved. Of course, this webinar is a great example, doing it digitally. And so just promoting the organization in general at meetings, conferences, within your employment, et cetera, and getting involved. And so the mentors that are assigned to each CEPIT or CEP generally have a quarterly check-in, and they are kind of advising in responsible charge and providing guidance regarding the application. So it is really a wonderful asset. So the application and review process for a CEP, and Chris did talk a little bit about kind of from a CRB standpoint and the certification, but again, your steps would be to complete the application, which is online through our CEP Express system, and pay the fee. Then you're going to upload your resume, transcripts, recommendation letters, your essays, publications, and professional activities. So you're able to load that right into our website. And then there's going to be an interview that's usually done over the phone, and the ethics pledge, which is like Mark was talking about earlier, is kind of a cornerstone of our organization. So just to reiterate, the responsible charge and supervision, Chris did address this very well earlier, but just to reiterate, responsible charge is projects that you've done and that you've completed without the advice or approval of others, and that can vary greatly within the environmental realm, but just projects that you've worked on. For supervision, it's more intuitive, like Chris said, it's basically just being able to supervise people. So just a few helpful tips in the application and review process. To provide all the required items on the application, so really important that you do emphasize the responsible charge or supervision. And and that you review the eligibility criteria so that you're making sure that you have completed your bachelor's degree, you have your transcripts, you have all the required, you know, 5 of the 9 years that must be in supervisory. Provide fully developed essays and demonstrate that you have an understanding of the body of knowledge. And, of course, we can help you understand the application, but cannot coach you on completing it. So the essay questions, just to break it down, as I mentioned before, there are a total of 5. 2 are required by everybody. The first 2 are basically keeping current, so it addresses the body of knowledge and what you as an environmental professional would like to contribute to that body of knowledge. And so you can add that as your first essay question. Your second essay question is going to address ethics. The other 3, you're able to choose from a functional area. So if you wanted to choose one of those functional areas previously mentioned, you can focus on that and you would address essay questions within that functional area. If you would like to just not have a functional area, you can choose essay questions from any of the essay questions available. So you could choose 1 from assessment, 1 from documentation, and another from sustainability if that's what you chose for your essay questions. The essay questions are scored based on responsiveness, perspective, specificity, logic of your argument, technical merit, innovativeness, and persuasiveness. And the certification is awarded if 5 of the 7 panel members recommend approval. So the CRB does exclusively decide on each of the applications. And ABCEP steps is the application and essay are assigned to the lead reviewer and a six-member panel. It takes about 3 months for them to review, and then the lead reviewer will host that telephone interview with you. So once you are certified, there is stuff that we would like you to do to maintain your CEP in good standing. One of which is keeping current on your annual maintenance dues. Of course, it's important that we fund our organization to keep it going and reaching out and running the organization itself. Tracking your annual maintenance points. So each CEP is required to have 40 maintenance points that they do on an annual basis, and those maintenance points can be derived from a variety of activities such as full-time employment, mentoring, and attending conferences, among other things. And so you are required to have those maintenance points to keep you current. You can become a mentor, and that is a great way, again, to get the maintenance points and also get involved. You can sit on the board of trustees and listen in on the phone calls or serve on the BOT, which I believe also gives you maintenance points. You can serve on the Certification Review Board, reviewing applications that come in. You can present about ABCEP and the CEP at meetings or conferences. And this will be the topic of ABCEP's next free webinar, so be on the lookout for additional details on that soon. And now I'm going to turn it over to our back to our president, Mark Gerber, who's going to open it up to questions.
All right, thank you. Before we close out here, I just want to take a minute to thank all those who presented today, as well as all of you in attendance. I think these kind of webinars are going to be really helpful to you. I know that it would have been very helpful to me, even though as I went through the process, it was fairly straightforward and easy to understand. But having had a webinar like this would have been wonderful for me. But you know, over the years, since I've had my CEP, I've received a lot of feedback from employers, clients, coworkers regarding that CEP certification and the value that it has to them. How the CEP gives credibility to my experience and credentials to my experience, and so I always promote that. So what I'd like to do now is we do have a couple of questions in the queue, but we'll address them. I'm going to turn the time back over to the Telspan operator, and she'll provide instructions for how you can ask questions over the phone. But after she takes over, then we'll address the two questions that are in the queue.
Thank you. To ask a question, please press 0 followed by a 1 on your touchtone phone. Questions will be answered in the order they are received. Again, if you have a question, please press 0 followed by a 1 now. And please hold for a moment as our system compiles your responses.
Okay, so the first question in our queue is speaking to a couple of the slides, and I'm going to turn this over to Chris and Tina, because I believe it was their slides. The question is, one of the slides said there was 5-year responsible charge for CEP, but the slide that was being shown said 9. Can you guys clarify?
I saw that, and I'm looking here. The slide that I had shows responsible charge or supervision of being 5 years required to apply for the CEP IT. The one that Tina mentioned, we had the fees in it, and it says in there that responsible charge of supervision was 9 years. I believe that should only be 5 there. That's probably a typo.
Okay. Thanks, Chris, for clearing that up.
Mm-hmm.
The next question in the queue asks about international degrees, whether if they're accredited by a recognized organization, whether they can apply towards your CEP. We've discussed this as a board in the past, and if those degrees are obtained through an accredited institution, that yes, they do count towards your CEP application and towards that process. So the next question in the queue asks, what is the relationship between ABCEP and FAEP? Tina, do you want to take that, or you're probably
sure
one to take that, but there's a good relationship there that you'll want to talk about.
Yeah, we just we have a partnership, and so the national so basically the academy is able to do the certification, where the other one, the National Association of Environmental Professionals, is more they host a conference and they are able to kind of be on the ground. Like in Florida, we have the Florida Association of Environmental Professionals, and so they network with the state organizations. But ABCEP, we are actually the certification organization, so we work with individuals to certify each individual with the CEP, where NAEP is more of a national organization that kind of hosts conferences and gets people involved in different things like that, but they do not have a certification that they do. But of course, As you're saying in this webinar, we have a partnership, and so we do work closely together.
And Mark, I'll add, this is Chris Temke, I'll add a little bit to that. Originally, the CEP program was under NAEP, but the certifying body that certifies the CEP credential told NAEP a number of years ago that the CEP review process needed to be a separate entity from NAEP, and that's when ABCEP was formed. So technically the two organizations are separate, but they arose from the same stock within NAEP, but had to become separate due to the certifying of the CEP credential by the certifying body.
Thank you. The next question asks, I'm currently a CEP IT. I work as a project manager in environmental compliance for my firm. I manage compliance projects for my clients, which are supported by our team of technical staff. I provide a final review of all projects prior to submittal to my clients. I assign and supervise projects. However, all projects go through a senior review process prior to submittal to my clients. Does this qualify as a responsible charge or supervision? And I'm going to turn that over to Chris, but before I do, that's a common scenario to be under, and a lot of that can be subjective as to whether you really are a supervisor or you're in charge of staff or projects. It appears, you know, in certain circumstances that I get in almost daily with folks in those circumstances, some of those projects may very well apply to that, to the process. But I'm going to give it over to Chris and see how he wants to address that question.
Yeah, Mark, you're exactly right. The reason we have seven panel members is because not everybody views the information that is submitted in the same way. And this is a really good example, as you said, Mark. What you have to do when you are in this situation is you have to explain in sufficient detail in the part of the application where you're discussing your in-charge experience the extent to which you were responsible for a project. In the business world and in the government world, there are people that do have to sign off on documents. But, and I guess I'll give you my sort of my personal opinion. If I when I was doing reviews before I became the chairman, and I don't get to do the reviews anymore, when I would see that scenario arise, the question that I would be looking for an answer for was, all right, did the supervisor just have to sign off on what you did, or did they actually go back in and make a bunch of changes and, you know, require things to be done differently? That would diminish, in my opinion, your responsible in charge for that particular project. But if the supervisor is just reviewing it, signing off on it, and not really making substantial changes to it, then you know, that probably indicates that you were the responsible person in charge. But that's my personal opinion. I know that the panel members that review these projects, everybody looks at it slightly differently. The panel members do have a chance to discuss with each other, and also this can be clarified, and this is many cases what happens. It's clarified in the interview process. If there's any doubt by any of the panel members, that's a question that's likely to come up during the interview and gives you a chance to further explain in your own words why you do meet the criteria of being the responsible in charge.
Thanks, Chris. So the next question is, can a copy of this presentation be sent to the attendees? We can send it out as a PDF in a follow-up email, and if you, I will do that to those attendees if you want that. So we can send it out. It won't come out as the PowerPoint, but it'll come out as a PDF. The next question is, can you start the application in eminence category? And if you don't meet the full criteria, can you apply in the CEP category? And the question is, or the answer is absolutely yes. I believe, Chris, you may correct me, we've had a couple who have been down that road and didn't quite make it in eminence and so turned around and applied it. And the same goes for the CEP. Your information can then be applied to the CEP IT if you don't qualify in the CEP category.
Yeah, Mark, you're right. We do get people that apply for eminence that probably shouldn't have. Keep in mind the eminence is for people that, you know, have 20 years of experience and 15 years of experience as a responsible in charge. So it's not for somebody who is, you know, in the middle of their career typically. If there's any doubt, I would suggest that people apply for the regular CEP. I mean, when you're certified as a CEP. It's not certified as a CEP or a CEP by eminence. You wouldn't notice any difference. The only thing that the reason for the eminence designation was so that people that really are senior level people don't have to answer essay questions, which some of them, we got some feedback that people didn't think that was appropriate for senior level people. So we substituted for that, you know, that they provide evidence of professional publications and documents that they've produced. But keep that in mind when you're applying. But yes, if you don't make it as an eminence, you can switch back to the CEP regular application, and then you just have to update your application to meet those criteria.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. The next question is, and this is similar to an earlier one, do writing NEPA analysis documents that are signed by a supervisor count toward responsible charge publications? And this is something I deal with every day. I'm the supervisor that signs them. However, I can look to those who are managing the projects and doing that day-to-day management of not only the projects but the staff and the sub-consultants that are involved. And I would certainly conclude that they are in responsible charge positions. Even though I sign the documents as a protection to the company, they are certainly in those responsible charge situations. And as Chris explained earlier, there are you can present that to the certification review board, and that is the stuff that gets reviewed by the CRB to determine whether that does count. But my experience has shown that in most cases that probably would. You got anything to add, Chris?
No, I think you covered it very well. Thank you.
All right, the next question is, any examples of record of service to profession in record of service to profession, is this publications, presentations at conferences, or work experience? All of the above, and then some, would be my answer, is that record of service to the profession may include things that may not be mainstream or traditional avenues by which you gain experience, but may be other things such as presentations at conferences. Work experience is generally accounted for in the time that you have been in the profession. But certainly publications, posters, presentations, those kinds of things would. But I'm going to defer to Chris to make sure that, because he manages the CRB and that board, that review board, that that's how they look at that. So, Chris, you got a response to that?
Yeah. You know, you could put information in a couple of different places sometimes. This might be an example of it. If you do a resume or attach a resume, you know, that would show maybe your list of publications. Also, record of service to the profession might be if you are a member of several other organizations, state or local organizations, you were the president or the chairman of a committee, things that also show that you've done things besides do professional publications would also go in this record of service to the profession. You know, if you're teaching, that might fit in there. What you want to make sure you do when you are applying for the CEP is make sure that you include all the things that you've done that relate to the profession. Put them where you feel they would fit best, and the panel members, when they see the application, they see everything. They review it all. It's all done electronically. You will actually download your information into the portal, and it'll be uploaded. Some letters can be recommendation can be sent in, but all that stuff is handled, and then the panel members get a chance to look at everything, and they. And I know that the panel members, they spend a lot of time on doing these applications. It takes them, each one of them, you know, hours to work on it because they give them a very thorough review. So as far as this one goes, you know, anything that you've done, like Mark said, outside of, you know, the normal work things, the work products you produce, the papers you might do, that's also where you would put records of service to the profession.
Great. Thanks, Chris. I just lost my questions. Okay. The last question, and I'm going to give this back to you, Chris, is 3 years the longest we can be a CEPIT before becoming a CEP? I don't have any supervision experience, but 5 years is required. Do I then need to be a CEPIT for 5 years?
I don't think there's a limit on the number of years that you can be a CEPIT. 3 is probably the minimum number. Tina, who's just been through the process, might be able to add a little bit more to that. But you may, if that's the case in your situation, that perhaps not starting the CEPIT right away would be the appropriate thing to do if you don't want to be a CEPIT for 5 or 6 years. Although I don't think there's any problem with that. Tina, do you know for sure? Is she still there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, hello. So in my instance, I was actually able to apply for the CEP with only having been a CEPIT for 2 years, and that's because basically I had reached the 8 years that were required. So I had the master's, which accounted for 1 year, and so with the 8 years having kind of become available for me to apply for the CEP fully. So the CEP and training, you know, can really vary. It just really depends on your personal experience. If you, you know, are way past that 9 years that are required, or, you know, you're kind of still working towards it, if you have the responsible charge or you don't. So it just kind of, it really varies, but I don't think there's any limit. You know, we've seen people that have been CEPITs for several years that can take people longer to get that experience, or maybe they're working on their essays. So it's really quite flexible.
Thank you, Tina and Chris. I don't see any other questions in the queue, but I did see a note from Tim Bauer that we will be sending out the PDF of this presentation to everyone who attended. Am I missing? I don't see any other questions. Okay, well, if there are no more questions, then that concludes the presentation. And again, thank you all for joining.
Thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.